Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. The state recorded a fourth straight day yesterday with over 200 new Alaska resident COVID-19 cases. Among the 200 new cases announced by the Department of Health and Social Services were 85 in Anchorage, 52 in Fairbanks, 5 in North Pole, and 1 each in Utqiagvik and the Yukon-Koyukuk census area. The Fairbanks-North Star Borough's total of 57 new cases in a single day set a new record, besting the previous high of 55 cases reported on October 4th. Statewide, more than half of the new cases were people between the ages of 20 and 39. There were no new COVID-19 deaths or hospitalizations reported in Alaska Monday. There are currently 41 confirmed COVID-19 patients and another 24 awaiting test results in Alaska hospitals. 8 patients are on ventilators. The body of one of two miners missing from a shipwreck near Nome has been recovered. KNOM reports that searchers found 56-year-old Serzhiy Denyasenko's body on the beach about 7 miles east of Nome Sunday. Alaska State Troopers say that leaves one crew member, 52-year-old Alexei Klichnikov, unaccounted for from the wreck of the 32-foot gold mining dredge vessel last Thursday. A third crew member, 51-year-old Pavel Denisenko, made it to shore in a life raft and called for help. The three miners were reportedly on their way back to Nome when the vessel capsized in high waves. Alaska State Troopers and the U.S. Coast Guard have been collaborating on the search. Early voting began in Alaska yesterday, and before 4 p.m. Monday, more than 3,000 people had voted in Division of Elections regional offices in Fairbanks, Juneau, Anchorage, and Wasilla, and more than 30,000 people have mailed in absentee ballots. As KUAC's Robin reports, election workers say they're committed to keeping up.
The politics of the presidential election have driven demand for early voting in Alaska. And the COVID-19 pandemic has driven demand for absentee ballots. Early voting stations around the state had long lines Monday, made longer by 6-foot gaps between people. And about a third of Alaska's registered voters have requested absentee ballots. Such high demand for early and absentee voting has expanded the duties of election workers.
It just could mean a lot of extra hours and time logging ballots, reviewing ballots, and getting them ready to open and counted. But we'll meet our statutory deadlines.
That's Division of Elections Director Gail Fanumiai. She says 35,700 mail-in ballots have already been returned. Those will start to get processed before Election Day, but not actually counted until 7 days after the election. So it's unlikely Alaska would call all the races until at least a week after. Ballots cast at early voting stations before October 29th will be counted on Election Day.
No different than in any other election.
In addition to the early and absentee ballot demand, the division is alert to any potential barriers to voting this year. Reports of imposter ballot boxes and voter intimidation from the lower 48 haven't quite come to the Alaska Elections Office, but there has been one report of a vehicle blocking a ballot box. Fanumiai wants voters to call the division if they have problems.
We have alerted law enforcement that early voting started. There could be a potential need for them to respond more than they have in the past, just in light of all the stuff you're hearing about what might be happening or not happening in the lower 48.
The division bought television advertising and produced online videos to inform Alaskans how to vote. Still, there is lots of misinformation.
To let us know as soon as possible if they feel like there was some kind of intimidation or suppression taking place, and then again if they're hearing misinformation or disinformation.
In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
Alaska coastal residents scrambled for higher ground yesterday after a magnitude 7.5 earthquake hit near Sand Point shortly before 1 p.m. KTOO and KUCB report that residents from Unalaska to the Kenai Peninsula felt the quake. Sand Point teacher and community radio station manager Austin Roof says the school serves as the evacuation point for the town's 1,000 residents.
We were pretty shaken up. The students were up in school at the time. But I guess from the last earthquake, we're all kind of ready for this.
The last earthquake he's referring to struck near Sand Point in late July. The Alaska Earthquake Center says yesterday's quake was likely an aftershock of that one, or at least related to it. The National Tsunami Warning Center reported that a small wave measuring about 2 feet reached Sand Point by 2:25 p.m. It's a repeat of a scenario state seismologist Mike West says is concerning.
We've had 4 tsunami warnings in Alaska since early 2018. And none of them happened to generate a deadly tsunami.
West says he thinks Alaskans may be lulled into a false sense of security. A report co-written by former Alaska Budget Director Donna Ardoin ranks Governor Mike Dunleavy as the second worst governor in the country on what it calls economic freedom. KTOO and Alaska Public Media report that in a webinar announcing the results, Ardoin says Alaska's state spending as a share of its overall economy is four times that of Florida.
So the spending is through the roof, and part of the reason is because of the policies, including union control, no education, the education choice, the welfare dependency is through the roof. So he's got a lot of opportunities across the board to improve his state's economy.
The report credited Dunleavy with trying to reduce spending, for not introducing an income tax, and for an attempt to end state collection of state employee union dues that stuck in a legal battle. But it considered cuts to permanent fund dividends, which the legislature passed over Dunleavy's objection, as a form of taxation. In a written statement, Dunleavy's office calls the report, quote, well-researched, adding that it is no secret that Alaska has taken decades to reach this point due to overspending, unquote. Ardoin was Alaska's budget director for 9 months after Dunleavy took office. She helped write the governor's first budget proposal, which drew criticism from lawmakers and members of the public. She recently helped lead a two-day seminar in Alaska. The report was published by the American Legislative Exchange Council, which promotes conservative state legislation. Anchorage Assembly Chair Austin Quinn Davidson will serve as interim mayor following the resignation of Mayor Ethan Berkowitz October 23rd. Alaska Public Media reports that Quinn Davidson will be the first female and first openly gay mayor of Anchorage. Former Anchorage Assembly Chair Felix Rivera nominated Quinn Davidson to the position, applauding her for a level-headed approach to municipal issues and a commitment to listening to constituents.
I know some think many on the Assembly do not listen or care about your opinion. Vice Chair Quinn Davidson is an excellent communicator who sincerely cares about what you have to say and will listen to all parts of our community.
She will serve until an election can be held to permanently fill the mayor's seat. An experimental wood bison herd introduced to the lower Innoko Yukon River area 5 years ago experienced a decline this year due to last winter's harsh weather. KWC's Mary Ald reports.
According to a survey of the wood bison population conducted in June, there are 94 bison in the population, including 9 calves. The population has declined by 19 animals since last year's survey. Biologist Tom Seaton attributes the decline to deep snow and cold temperatures late last winter. In March and April, bison need to eat grass to replenish the nutritional reserves they've depleted over the long winter. When layers of snow and ice prevented the animals from eating plants, some could not survive. The bison, which are native to the area, were reintroduced with enthusiastic local support in 2015. Since they were introduced, the population grew for 3 years and declined 2 years. The declines align with harsh late winter conditions like those seen last winter. The good news is the 2020 decline was less dramatic than the decline in 2018, when there was a winter with similarly harsh conditions. That indicates that the bison may be adapting to these conditions and learning to survive despite weather challenges. They've learned to navigate their range, avoid predators, and find the best food. Seaton says he sees the population as well established at this point. He expects that, barring unusually harsh weather conditions, the population will continue to grow in the future. For KUAC, I'm Mary Ald.
And I'm Dan Bross.